deepest, darkest crypts, to the backwoods swamp where you hit the bottom, from the inside of your casket to the fears lodged deep inside your subconscious. It's time for the Big Scary Show.
Jomo coming to you live from the Mad Monster Party, and you are listening very carefully to the Big Scary Show.
Hi, this is John Rupert with Firefly Magic, and you can find Firefly Magic at fireflymagic.com. You're listening to the Big Scary Show.
Hello, creeps. It's me,
John Kassir, the voice of
the Crypt Keeper. And you're listening to the Big Scary Show, the top podcast in the industry.
Hi, this is Ralis Khan on the Big Scary Show. We're here at Transworld where we're kicking butt, or our butts are getting kicked. One of the two, I don't know which.
Hi, this is Riley Morgan from Expendable, and you're listening to The Big Scary Show.
Hi, this is John Hires from John Hires Visual Effects, and you're listening to The Big Scary Show.
You're listening to The Big Scary Show with three big scary men and one that wears more makeup than I do.
Live from Studio 666. It's the Big Scary Show, starring the Not Ready for Any Time players, Storm, the Unknown Scare Actor, the Hauntstrumentalist Jerry Vane, and Drew Badger. Musical guest, verse 13. Chris Thomas's music for Haunts and Shadow Symphony. And featuring the Haunt Minute, Scare Actor Spotlight with Christine Lajewski, and the Round Table of Terror. Interviews with Scream Queen Riley Morgan and Joe Moe of the Mad Monster Party, featuring the Guyliner All-Star Band, and a segment from Special Correspondent Feister with his review of the Haunted Schoolhouse in Akron. Ladies and gentlemen, the Big Scary Show! Hello everybody, Drew Badger. We are live here at the Mad Monster Party in Charlotte. We're checking out lots of cool kids and seeing everything that's going on. And it's not often I go to a show like this and I find somebody local. Actually, I've known this person for a couple of years. Very, very nice and very lovely lady here, known as one of our local Scream Queens. She's been in a bunch of indie films, and her husband puts out a bunch of these things, and she stars in a lot of them, and I'm sure it's lots of gore and guts and vampires and lots of cool things. Riley Morgan, nice to have you on the show.
I'm happy to be here.
Now, as a Scream Queen, did you have to, like, audition for that role? Did somebody dub thee a Scream Queen, like Linnea Quigley or somebody, who I know you know? I mean, did you have to, like, go up to somebody and actually scream in order to become a Scream Queen?
No, I think it was more the amount of blood that we use in the films. It was something that I was dubbed. I don't really feel deserving of it in a way, because technically I've actually never screamed in a film.
The irony is not above reproach here.
Definitely. But yeah, the horror genre kind of adopted us, and we are very grateful for it.
And when you have people coming up here, and you've got some people at the end of the table here, and they're looking through photographs, and they're buying signatures and things like that, what are they talking about? I mean, they've seen the films. There's DVDs here. What in the books? What are they asking you questions about mostly?
Mainly, they want to know which film has the most blood and has the most nudity.
Okay.
Past that, what's most recent?
Hoping there'll be more blood and nudity.
Probably, because, you know, that's what sells.
Please. All those 80s R-rated horror movies. There was no nudity in, well, I guess there was, yes. But, I mean, you know, it's fun. You got your start many years ago, actually, doing this. I mean, you've been putting out indie films for a very long time.
Yes, indeed. Since 2001.
And how many titles do you have under your belt now?
11.
Wow.
Yeah.
What's new on the horizon?
Trying to figure that out, actually. I have a script that I have sat on for a few years trying to piece it together. So if we can get funding for that.
Are you going to do like one of these GoFundMe pages or something like that?
No, I'm hoping to kind of skirt that and get actual backing.
Oh, very nice.
Yeah. We'll see how it works.
Have you ever worked without your husband there? Because it does seem like he tags his name as, you know, producer and writer and all that stuff on almost everything you've done. But have you ever worked on something without him being a part of it?
Not yet.
Not yet. But you're willing to possibly do something. So, like, if George Romero, who's here now, says, hey, I want you in my next film.
Most definitely.
Well, maybe we'll just have to get you and George together or some of the other folks out here, because it's always fun to do that, right?
Oh, definitely.
And you get to rub noses and elbows with all the high class out here.
Oh, yeah.
And it's a lot.
It's special.
So for people wanting more information on Riley Morgan and Mark Baranowski, who is your husband, and all the films that the 11 films that you have, chock full of gore and nudity, how can they get more information, websites, social medias, and things like that?
createtolive.com.
Is that with the number or the letters?
That is with the letters, yes. And lifeofriley.com.
And Riley is spelled R-Y-L-I.
L-I, yes.
So lifeofriley.com and createtolive.com.
Correct.
An absolute pleasure to have you here at the Mad Monster. Obviously, you didn't have to drive too far or catch a plane or anything, so that's great.
15 minutes. That's awesome.
Oh, God, I hate you. Anyway, my name is Drew Badger for The Big Scary Show, and we are out.
Want to take your haunt to a new dimension of terror? Then let Dark Imaginings conjure up some ghoulish graphics and web design services for your home, haunt, or crypt. Since 2007, professional and home haunters alike have trusted our award-winning and dedicated skeleton crew to make their nightmares come true. Whether you need graphic design services, logos, websites, spooky visuals, or creepy changing portraits, we can help your business look its scary best. To see more of our products and services, drop by darkimaginings.com. Let us help you get ahead of your competition.
Broadcasting to you from the darkest reaches of the earth, this is A Haunt Minute. And now, with this week's commentary, Storm.
Alright, so, have you ever noticed that all your other fellow actors and everybody else you know in the haunt industry never really use their full real names in the haunt industry? You know, nobody knows this. Everybody as, you know, John Smith, whatever. There's always nicknames or last names or something cool going on. I wondered this myself, so I looked into it. I found a 2012 study done by Mesketonic University. Yeah. If you follow things correctly, you'll recognize that university. They did this study on the success rate of seasonal entertainment industries, and it went into names, and it found that there is only a 38% success rate of people who just use their given birth name in the seasonal entertainment industry. And that's across the board. Very weird. So, got to look into it. Is it cursed? And you start looking around. You know, those regular people come in and get into the haunt industry and just think, all right, here we go. And they, you know, just usernames. It's, you know, you know him as John Smith. You know, that's how it is. Nothing special, nothing going with it. You ever notice they don't last more than a season? That there's something. That whatever muse controls the haunt industry has a curse against anybody who isn't creative themselves in their names. Coming from someone named Storm, this is fantastic. But think about it. How many people you know who just go by a regular name and don't have a nickname or a last name or something like that? Are they really good in the industry? Are they the haunt actors that you trust and work with? No, it's all cursed. And there's scientific evidence found on the internet, internet facts, to prove it and back it up. My other question is too, so if this works with the haunt industry, does that also mean that mall Santas don't use their real names? So until next time, keep every minute scary. Internet fact!
Hi, this is Josh Gates from Travel Channel's Expedition Unknown, reminding you to send all hate mail to storm@bigscaryshow.com.
Tune in next episode for another Haunt Minute. And in the meantime, share your opinions on the Big Scary Show Facebook page and on Twitter at Big Scary Storm.
Verse 13, Empty Coffin on the Big Scary Show.
Greetings, mortals, and anything else listening. Welcome to the Big Scary Show's Deadline News.
Start out with a little hiring news from the Vault of Souls in Tampa, Florida. The Vault of Souls, Tampa's elegant evening of performance art with a sinister twist, is seeking actors to portray the residents of this unusual world. Auditions will be held Tuesday, June 14th, Wednesday, June 15th, and Thursday, June 16th from 6 to 10 p.m. If you're auditioning or interested in auditioning, please email your name and phone number to auditions@scottswenson.com to request an audition time slot. Please include which night you would like to attend, and please prepare to tell a ghost story no longer than 2 minutes. You will also be asked to participate in an improvised group exercise. All positions are paid. Auditions for musicians, dancers, and variety artists will be posted soon. Get more info at facebook.com/thevaultofsouls. Now a little more hiring news from the Factory of Fear in Moline, Illinois. Have you ever wanted to act at a haunted house, or do you just really love zombies? If so, now's your chance. The Factory of Fear is looking to expand our cast for the weekend of May 13th and 14th for our Infected event. Actors will be extras and may have an opportunity, if they wish, to stay on for future events. Extras should be 18 years of age or older, be reliable, and have a desire for flesh. Head over to QCFactoryOfFear.com and apply right now. We have an update from Days of the Dead in Indianapolis. It is with great pleasure that we announce the addition of actor and comedian Charles Fleischer to the guest roster for Days of the Dead Indianapolis, happening June 24th through the 26th at the Wyndham Indianapolis West. Charles Fleischer is best known for appearing in such films as A Nightmare on Elm Street, Tales from the Crypt, Demon Knight, and Who Framed Roger Rabbit, for which he voiced Roger Rabbit and Benny the Cab, among other characters. He's also appeared in Back to the Future 2, Bad Dreams, and Zodiac. Charles Fleischer joins previously announced guests Shawn Michaels, Phil Anselmo, Martin Cove, William Zabka, Tyler Mane, Bill Moseley, and many others as Days of the Dead returns to the city that started it all for their sixth year in a row, June 24th through the 26th at the Wyndham Indianapolis West. Tickets for Days of the Dead Indianapolis are on sale now at daysofthedead.net. We have some news from the Don't Be a Monster Anti-Bully campaign. Here's a letter from Aaron, the general manager, or program manager. Hi everyone, this is Aaron, program manager for Don't Be a Monster. We're a nonprofit that works with haunted houses throughout the U.S. to put on bullying prevention assemblies for students in grades 4 through 10. We talk to kids about acceptance, including others, community building, and appreciating differences, to name a few. I need your help. Don't Be a Monster is going to start sharing stories on our Facebook page, and I'd like to hear yours. I want to hear about how bullying has affected your life and how you handled it. Think of it as advice for your younger self. What you wish someone older with more experience had told you while you were struggling. These stories are meant to encourage and inspire young adults. So because of that, we are not looking for violent resolutions or stories with profanity. I'm willing to post the stories anonymously if that is your wish, but I do request that you send me some sort of photo with your story. It can be artwork. If it's not yours, please provide the artist credit. A photo of yourself at that age, a photo of yourself now, etc. Please send your story submissions to be posted on the Don't Be a Monster page or any questions to me at info@don'tbeamonster.org. Thank you for participating in this project. We have news from Walker Stalker Con coming to Charlotte. Walker Stalker Con comes to Charlotte, North Carolina the weekend of June 25th and 26th at the Park Expo and Conference Center. Meet the stars of The Walking Dead and Fear the Walking Dead. Have the opportunity to personally meet your favorite celebrities. With exclusive panels, celebrity photo ops, events, and so much more, you'll have the experience of a lifetime. And tickets are on sale now. For a list of all the guests, panels, and everything Walker Stalker Con, visit walkerstalkercon.com/charlotte. We have a little more hiring news from the Exit 13 Haunted House in Mount Morris, Michigan. The performance department at Exit 13 Haunted House will be holding auditions every Sunday at 3 p.m. beginning May 1st for their 2016 season. All applicants will be subject to a background check and must be at least 18 years of age. The location is 6069 South Saginaw, Mount Morris. No costumes are required. At Exit 13 Haunted House, we love to have fun, but are serious when it comes to scaring people. We want to continuously improve our skills, the quality of our customers' experience, and the state of the haunt industry overall. Cast members must be available for a minimum of 10 performance nights out of 25, with October 30th and 31st being mandatory. They open late on Halloween to make time for trick-or-treating. Preference will be given to individuals available for all performances. You must be at least 18 years of age to be part of our crew, and all crew are subject to a background check. Please bring your ID to your interview if possible. If you cannot attend auditions but are seriously interested in joining us, contact us via our Facebook page, facebook.com/exit13, that's the number 13, Haunted House, to schedule an audition and see if we still have open positions. We have some toy news regarding Boglins. What's old truly is new again in our nostalgia-obsessed culture, and we're totally okay with that. With long-dead toy lines like Mad Balls returning to shelves, we can't help but wonder which of our favorite things from the past are soon headed back to our lives, and that thought is kind of exciting. Speaking of which, remember Boglins? It looks like they're coming back. Created by Tim Clark and originally released in 1987, the Boglins toy line consisted of rubber hand puppets that were both gross and adorable, and the line eventually grew to include all sorts of variations on the original concept. Coolest of all were two Halloween Boglins, one painted like a pumpkin and the other a skeleton. The line was briefly restarted in 2000 but quickly vanished. Now, nearly 30 years after their original arrival, the Boglins are showing signs of life. Tim Clark, who's pretty active over on Instagram and often shares fun images and anecdotes from his toy designing past, posted a picture recently of an in-progress Boglin sculpt, noting that the sculpt is a, quote, sneak peek at the new clay Boglins, which we are working on with Clutter Gallery, unquote. He didn't provide any further information, though the tease was enough to excite his followers. And finally, we have this story from Shocktoberfest in Sinking Spring, Pennsylvania. Shocktoberfest fans, we need your bodies. Shocktoberfest is opening the Prison of the Dead on Friday the 13th of May for you to experience for free. Why do you ask? This is a story about a truly remarkable 14-year-old boy named Nicholas Jordan. Sadly, due to muscular dystrophy, Nick has some very serious health issues. In an attempt to bring some joy to this young man's life, Moment of Peace Adventures and Shocktoberfest have created a special event based on Nick's desire to be a zombie and scare people. We're calling it Nick's Fright Night at Shocktoberfest. Since Shocktoberfest doesn't open again until September, we need as many people as possible to help make his wish come true and make this event a huge success. There is no cost involved. Participants will get to enjoy the thrills and laughs of one of the largest haunted houses on the East Coast, and Nick gets to scare thousands of people. Please help us make this child's fantasy come true. Afterwards, the party will continue with live music from Morgan Konopelski, along with food and beverage for purchase, with a percentage of the proceeds going to the Jordan family. So come on out to Shocktoberfest on Friday, the 13th of May. We will put as many people as possible through the doors between 8 p.m. and 11 p.m. Let's show Nick that Shocktoberfest has the best fans in the world. Please share and comment on social media to let us know if you can make the big event. Thank you so much. You can get more information at shocktoberfest.com.
Remember, folks, if you have news about the haunt, horror, or Halloween industry, please send it to us at news@bigscaryshow.com, and we'll get it on the air. No news is too big or too small. This concludes this edition of the Big Scary Show's Deadline News.
Do you want online ticketing but get scared by service fees? HauntPay is scary simple ticketing and payments for your haunted attraction. With features made for haunts, including timed ticketing and repeat time slots, variable ticket types, bundled and combo tickets, social media discounts, and more. HauntPay is designed with haunted attractions in mind. Check them out at hauntpay.com and start now for free.
Ladies and gentlemen, on Friday the 13th of April, 2012, we started this crazy journey that we call The Big Scary Show with our very first show and our very first Roundtable of Terror. We've taken about a month off because of all the Transworld information, and now we're back. We're talking about everything that's kind of gone on in the industry since 2012. No guest tonight, but our wonderful hosts who have been with us since the beginning, including Storm.
Greetings from Rhode Island.
The Unknown Scare Actor.
The Bowels of Hell, a.k.a. Cincinnati.
The Haunstrumentalist, Jerry Vane.
Yeah, bowels.
Boop. My name is Drew Badger. I'm in Charlotte, which is beautiful right now. No bowels around. But anyway, gentlemen, a lot has changed in the haunted house industry since, shall we say, April 2012. A lot of things, you know, a lot of things we've watched come and go. A lot of conventions have disappeared and started up new ones. And a lot of, shall we say, ownership of conventions has changed hands in that year. Let's start off with conventions because, you know, Midwest is coming up in just about, five, 6 weeks or so. When we started this in 2012, the current ownership did not own the Midwest Haunters Convention, and frankly, it's the only time of the year we ever seem to get together, so what are your thoughts about that?
Well, I mean, there's definitely been some changes with how MHC has been run, both positive and, I don't want to use the term questionable, but...
How about not positive?
How about things that could be changed or made better? Things that were told that would happen for the next year, and so far no changes have been seen.
Right.
I know that, you know, the biggest complaint everybody has is the bus tour. I remember last year we gotten word that they were looking at a 2-day with the possibility with an option of both days or one or the other, and it's a 1-day trip, and that's turned off a lot of people. Do I think it's worth complaining about? No, not really. Because we don't have that out here. So I'll take a 1-day trip over 2-day. Yes, 2 days are more fun. Yes, you got, you know, socializing and networking and everything, but it's better than not having a convention at all.
Right.
At least from my perspective.
Absolutely.
As far as the show floor, I think the show floor has gotten bigger. I think they took what the previous owners did and definitely expanded on it. Some in a very positive way, some in a, well, okay, you know, coming from a vendor as well as a participant. Some things I found a little, but other than that, it and, you know, and this is the only one I can jump in on because it's the only one I've been to. I feel that, like anything, there's still room for growth and improvement. But overall, I think the changes have been good. Do I miss how it was? Yeah, I do. You know, the feel then compared to the feel now with the new ownership, there's definitely a different vibe. But that's going to happen with any change. And it's sad that I went to see so many people sit there and throw comments. Well, these guys do 2-day doors and these guys do 2. Who cares? They're not the same convention. Everything's different. So, in a roundabout way, I think the complaining about how these conventions are, you know, 4 years ago compared to now has definitely amped up. People are getting a little too butthurt over ridiculous things, in my opinion.
That's a great way to put it. I remember when I got a phone call, I believe on a Friday night, from one of the owners of the convention at the time, and said, "I'm giving you breaking news. Starting next year, it will be no longer the Midwest Haunters Convention. It will be Transworld brings you the Midwest Haunters Convention." I think that was a huge. It kind of changed the face of the convention industry, so to speak. I mean, you know, Transworld's always been around, and it's, you know, it's a great show, and the Unknown Scare Actor and myself have been able to attend. Wicked Wendy and Tater have attended. Tater's there in a vendor capacity. Wicked Wendy has been there as well, as far as our correspondents go. And it's just very interesting to see the way that the convention industry has kind of changed since 2012. I mean, the owners of Transworld started a new convention down in Florida that did not work out, apparently. They started Legendary Haunt Tour, which I can't remember if it had already been around a couple of years by the time 2012 rolled around, and is continuing to be successful. And now there's talk that they're going to be doing an escape room convention. So it's really interesting to see how the hierarchy of conventions, so to speak, has changed in the last 4 years. I mean, I remember, you know, back in April and May, you couldn't go a weekend without going to something. There was National in Pennsylvania. That's gone. HauntCon was wherever HauntCon was that year. That's moved to January. There was Canadian. That's gone. And there's, you know, some other cons that have popped up to replace them, but they're not in that time frame that we always used to call convention season. You know, Chicago Frights is in July now. If people were saying this is way too late for a convention, how dare you? You'll never get a vendor. Everyone's too busy. Well, last year they had their first one. It seemed to be okay. There's a new one opening in Texas at the end of August, and I think there's a couple of more large ones that are poking up even later in the year. You know, the ones on the West Coast, there's a new one going to be at the end of July. There's Scare LA in early August. And I think there's one coming up in Utah that's actually going to be in October. And while I don't think it's necessarily a Haunters convention, it's not a horror con per se. They're talking makeup demos. They're talking vendors. They're talking, you know, lots of Halloween-themed things. So it's interesting to see how 4 years ago, basically everything ran from March to June, and now it's basically January almost until October, it seems.
Well, you know, back in 2012, like you've been saying, it was so easy to plan out everything. You knew which conventions you were going to go to. If you were fortunate enough to go to more than two or three a year, then you knew what your options were and where your options were. But everything has don't want to say changed. It's more of a morphed into something different with this expanded season all the way into August and even October. And then you have to look at, and aside from just all the Haunters conventions, look at all the paranormal and horror conventions that have really started popping up in the past 4 or 5 years. Some of them are relatively new. Some of them are established. The Days of the Dead keeps adding cities every time we turn around, which, you know, is a good thing because it gets more of that convention feel out to more fans.
Right. And let's just be honest. Cosplay right now is big. So all these conventions are taking on an aspect of, well, let's all dress up as a zombie. Let's all dress up as a superhero. Let's all dress up as, you know, whoever, and go to these conventions. Conventions business has really exploded in the last few years. There's probably not a weekend of the year where there's not some kind of sci-fi, horror, comic book, anime, paranormal convention going on in the U.S. or Canada.
Well, you know, bringing up the costumes and cosplay and things like that, that, you know, falling back into our side of conventions, a lot of people were upset that Transworld wasn't allowing random costumes like they have in the past.
Mm-hmm.
And you know what? they should never have been, because it is a trade show, not a social convention. However, they allowed it for so long, people get butthurt about it. And you know what? It was easier to negotiate the aisles this year without having a bunch of people in costume. Now, I might get some grief from this from some of our listeners out there, but that's business. Costumes are for MHC.
Or any of the other conventions, I agree. There's two major trade shows in this business. There's Transworld and there's IAPA.
Right.
And from what I've heard, IAPA is basically even more formal. I think you either have to have business casual or at least a golf shirt and khakis to get on the floor. And having not been there, I can neither confirm nor deny that. But, you know, it's interesting that that's something that's just kind of reared its head up in the last couple of years. And I think that's also because of the explosion of cosplay and these TV shows and all this stuff that the movies are all about superheroes and stuff like that. And, you know, I think people are saying, well, there's this trans world. That's a big looking convention. Let's all go dress up as Spider-Man and Deadpool and go hang out. And then, like you said, you know, they get all offended when they can't do that. So
butthurt.
That could be part of it too. I mean, there's always a security thing. I think also there's more of a push in the industry, and what we're seeing from our customers is the professionalism. The, you know, having something else and not being a ragtag thing. They're starting to really expect a professional haunt from professional haunts. You know, just your charity haunt run by a bunch of high school kids and stuff worked 20 years ago, maybe worked 5 years ago in some areas. But now, if you're not competing, if you don't have the technology, if people don't feel, hey, we're spending a night on a type of quality event that you'd see at Universal or any other destination, if you're not doing that and you don't have that professional sense to it, people aren't valuing your haunt and you're losing out on customers. I really think, you know, even over the past 4 or 5 years, the customer base has gotten very educated for haunts. And, right, you know, you can draw people in, but if you don't have something new, you aren't wowing them, you aren't giving them value for the dollar they're spending, they won't return.
I think you're absolutely right on that, and it's a great point. You know, shows like Making Monsters and Monster Man and those things where they actually taught you behind the scenes how these things worked and how, you know, look at what Face Off has done for the industry. You know, it's shown that, you know, a lot of talented people are out there. And I think it's trying to – God, this sounds bad – but it's trying to legitimize the haunt industry in – you know, middle America. You know, so many people look at what we would call a typical haunter, black t-shirt, you know, introverted, you know, listens to metal or goth or something like that as kind of that social outcast. But now we've kind of become mainstream, for lack of a better word. And I think people are kind of looking at us with a little bit more, as you say, an educated eye. It was like, well, I've seen this prop. I saw this on a TV show, so I'm not necessarily scared of it now. In fact, I'm actually more admiring the detail of it, whereas a few years back you would just be scared and run out the door. I mean, it's like the average person going through a haunt is now taking more time to look around and enjoy what's in there because they've actually seen a little bit of the backstage, how this stuff is done.
I think even the home haunters have seen that too, because, you know, over the past 4 years, we've seen a lot of people who started out as home haunters having to go professional or just growing so big that they did. And even to get people to come see your yard at Halloween, if you're not better than what people can see on their street already, people aren't going to come. And, you know, you're doing a lot of work for just a couple passerbys and trick-or-treaters. And there's so much competition, and a lot of places like Spirit has really changed their dynamic and their product core over the past few years. They're not concentrating on your Halloween party people as much. They have huge concentration on the home haunters. Look at how many more props and things they had. They've been cutting back each year on how many costumes they are. When you look at the square footage, there's still a lot of costumes, but you're seeing more accessories, you're seeing more props, and you're seeing more lighting, more effects that people would use, decor for the house. It's starting, they're really going into that market, which even creates this professional competition with home haunters. If you don't have something that's newsworthy, people aren't going to come out and see it.
Exactly. Let's take a quick break to remind everybody you are listening to the Roundtable of Terror here on the Big Scary Show. We want you to listen to our very fine sponsor of the Roundtable, Necrotic Creations. Take a listen to them, and we'll be right back.
The Roundtable of Terror, brought to you by the word butthurt.
You know how it is. You're alone. There's the internet. You start clicking. You're looking for something necrotic. Some things you see, your grandmother wouldn't call necrotic. Click on some other sites. Whoa, that is just way, way too necrotic. But then you find Necrotic Creations. Necrotic. You may not know what necrotic means, but you know it when you see it. Get necrotic. Necrotic Creations. Shop anytime at necroticcreations.com.
And ladies and gentlemen, we are back to the Roundtable of Terror. We're kind of talking about all the changes in the industry since we hit the air. I don't think we had anything to do with it directly, of course. But we're talking about haunted houses and how the public is becoming more educated on it. And one thing that I have definitely noticed over the last few years, been going on for some time, is the fact that Halloween does not seem to be regulated just to October anymore. Haunted houses are opening in September a lot of times. I have a feeling within the next 5 years, opening around Labor Day might be the norm rather than the exception. And there's a lot of these seasonal events, one weekend only, Christmas haunt and Valentine's Day and St. Patrick's Day. You know, do you think that's just because, you know, people really crave going to haunted houses, or do you think it's the haunted house guys trying to see if they can make a little extra money, or do you think that, like we said before, you know, the fact that all these shows kind of show you behind the scenes and stuff, Halloween's become a lot more interesting to a lot of people, and it's no longer just that one thing you do in October?
I'd say all three. I mean, more so trying to capitalize, you know, a lot of these haunts are only open during the Halloween season. So if they can expand into doing other themes, you know, that's potentially more revenue for the haunt to help up, you know, upgrade for the next season.
Of course.
I personally love the idea. Do all of them pull it off well? From what I've seen, some do a great job and some are hit and miss. I think that the whole, because of that Krampus movie, and especially what you've seen at Transworld recently, Krampus is going to be making a bigger impact, I think, for the Christmas season haunts than ever before. Do I think it's going to, you know, be overkill? 50-50 maybe? Just depends on how people do it.
I guess you got to wonder if we would actually consider something like that overkill versus, you know, Joe Sixpack. I mean, Krampus was very much in attendance at Transworld. Jim, that one that was, what, 12 feet high, holding the baby, screaming the whole time incessantly on the show floor all day long. Oh, I'm sorry.
But it was impressive.
It was very impressive. And I agree with you, Jerry. One thing, let's throw it out to what happened in Vegas with Eli Roth. He opened up and shut Goratorium within a year, it seems, a couple of years.
Not even that long.
Yeah, it closed in, what, September? I mean, you'd think he would have at least kept it over in October, but what happened? Was it just bad management, or was the desire just not there for people to go to a year-round haunt in a place like Vegas?
I think that the idea was there. I just don't feel that it was implemented well enough. They brought in some great people to, you know, from the industry to work on it. But one of the big problems was the location. Everybody's like, well, it's on the strip. Yeah, it's on the strip on the second floor above a Walgreens. That right there is screaming, because unless it's a restaurant, how many people are going to look up there? Nobody. Talking to actors that work there, they were more concerned about the bar at the end of the show than they were about the haunt itself.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, the bar was visually stunning, but the haunt itself was just not – they just didn't seem – from what the actors I spoke to, and I know about 10 people that worked there, all the actors said it would have been great had there been some direction and that the management running it actually cared. It was basically, well, it's got his name on it, so that'll sell. Eli Roth, unless you're in the haunted house industry or into horror movies, which a large majority of the population are not into horror movies, nobody's going to know who the hell Eli Roth is.
Right.
If, you know, so the biggest complaint I heard, like I said, was it was just run very poorly.
It was probably run very business-like and needed to have some haunted house people running it as opposed
well,
to...
Well, they brought in people. Several people to work from the industry to work at it.
Oh, okay.
Actually, there's a good chance it's the opposite. They may have concentrated too much on house. When you're on the strip in Vegas and you open up something like that, if you look at it that, oh, I'm opening up a haunted house, you're going to fail. What they're opening up is an entertainment venue, which is a problem. You have to run it excellently because you are competing with everything else there.
Exactly.
That is
unfortunately,
a super saturated – well, that's a thing. It's a super saturated entertainment market. If we go, oh, we're the only year-round haunt, well, no, you're not competing with other haunts by doing that. You're competing with every show. You're competing with every attraction down there, and it's a saturated market. So if you're going to do it and come in, you got to do it spectacularly.
And part of the problem, too, is that there was an age limit. And that, I think, might have hurt it even more because, you know, they, you know, you've got a bar at the end. You know, you empty out into a bar. You come out of the haunted house and into a bar. You're not into a general area where, okay, if you want to go to the bar, you can go this way. If you want to go to the gift shop, you can go this way. It dumped you in the bar.
Well, that
you can't bring a 15-year-old kid into the bar.
And that's your target market. I mean, you know,
right?
Most of the haunts listening to this, you're Friday night. You're a babysitting service. Sorry to say it, but at least you're making money.
And that's what a lot of people expected. Was, you know, oh, we'll just send them to the haunted house. What do you mean they can't go in there? They're not old enough.
Mm. That's a shame.
Worse. You expanded your competition because you cut out, you know, competing against other entertainment venues which let under 18 in, and now you're competing directly with the gaming floor. I mean, mm-hmm. you know, if people are coming to Vegas and they're over 21, that's where they're going to hang out first. So,
right.
You know, you just shot yourself in the foot.
Right.
Wow. And, you know, there's not been a – I have not seen a whole lot of year-round haunts popping up, maybe because of one reason this. But, you know, the year-round things seem to be doing reasonably – I mean, the holiday ones seem to be doing reasonably well. There's a smaller haunt maybe an hour from me that was open Christmas last year. Never would have in a million years expected them to be open for Christmas, but they were, and it was fun. It was an absolute fun haunt. Had a great time. And we hopefully can see that expand with other haunts in the future, because I think the more and more haunted houses out there that are open during, you know, maybe a weekend here and a weekend there, just kind of keeps the holiday out there in people's minds. They don't start thinking, oh, well, you know, the leaves are changing. I guess I ought to start thinking about going to a haunted house
by
1 or 2 a year. You know, at least keep it in people's minds.
The only problem with that is when you're looking at it from that point of view, it is, I mean, it's a specific market to begin with during season. And depending on your location, it may not make it any other time.
That is true.
I mean, there's haunts out there that have a great market. They can do this every holiday rolls around. There's other haunts that do very well during season but can't do anything else because it just there's no market to support it.
I agree with that. And there's also, you know, haunts that aren't permanent. You know, we're talking permanent year-round haunts at this point too, not the haunted trail or the haunted hayride or something that has other things going on during the year too. You're absolutely right that the market can't support them all the time. Although, you know, I do think one negative thing about it is, does it diminish the month of October? If you can go to a haunted house in your area 4 times a year, does it diminish its coolness than if you could only see it once a year? Or do you think that haunt has to up its game constantly. You know, there's that one haunt in Dallas, Dark Hour, Alan Hobbs' haunt, that changes its show every holiday. It's not just going through the same haunt or, oh my, this is blackout weekend, we're going to give you a glow stick and run through it. They completely change their show, I believe, 8 times a year.
Right.
With different themes. Sometimes you go through the haunt a different direction, you know, and that I can see, but I don't see that happening in many haunts, and I doubt there's too many of them that can pull that off just because of the massive undertaking it has to be in order to do that, I'm guessing.
Well, Dark Hour is one of those haunts that's an anomaly, for lack of a
better
term.
Yeah, that's a good way of putting it. Anything Alan's got his hand, no, just kidding.
Well, no, and, you know, kudos to Alan to be able to do this, but they also have the ability, they have the budget and the manpower to do this and do it well.
Sure.
Other haunts aren't quite as fortunate, and that's not, I'm not detracting from anything Dark Hour does at all. They've got a great operation, and they know what they're doing. But, you know, these other smaller ones, they try too. I mean, and maybe they can't change things on as grand a scale, but they might rely on things like a blackout night just to, to mix things up during the off season.
Oh, I'm not discounting blackout nights. I think those are great. I'm just I was just using Dark Hour as an example of a completely different show.
Right.
You know, but as far as I know, they're the only haunt in the country that has such an absolute variation of shows. And if I'm wrong, please email us, feedback@bigscaryshow.com. Love to hear the hate mail. But, you know, haunts like 100 Acre Manor, they're only open in October, as far as I know. Shows like Netherworld only open in October, as far as I know. The Darkness, except for Transworld, they're only open during the season, so to speak. But there are, I think there's a whole lot more mid-range haunts that do have a Friday the 13th opening or a Christmas haunt. They won't do a Valentine's, or they'll do a Valentine's Day and they won't do an Easter haunt. I mean, you were just at a haunt, weren't you, that's doing an off-season?
Yeah. I was at a haunt in Indiana, and, you know, they're just they were doing a fundraiser for their actors. So I think that was a great idea for what they were doing. I mean, here we are. They're doing something proactive for everybody. People are getting entertained, and they were busy. You know, their actors are going to benefit from it. It's a small haunt, and, you know, they don't have the super budget and everything, and every penny counts. So they're just trying to help their actors out a little bit, and there you have it.
Sure. Let's change topics just a little bit. Some of the things that have been kind of big at haunted houses over the last few years, zombie shoots. You know, 3 years ago, 4 years ago, these things were, you know, huge. Walking Dead, biggest show on TV, still is. Don't know who Negan killed. We'll find out in October, I guess. But, you know, have zombie shoots jumped the shark? You know, or have they been replaced by escape rooms, which are, oh my God, they're exploding so damn fast. I mean, I don't even know what to make of escape rooms. I mean, those are just two really big things I've seen happen in the industry since we started this show. Has anybody, you know, I've done zombie shoots. I've stood behind an escape room and watched through the monitors, but I've never participated in one. Anybody been to one or?
Not yet, but I've seen some zombie shoots. I think the zombie shoot is starting to fade away.
I tend to agree with you.
Zombies are still hot. I mean, they're not boiling hot, but they're still hot. But the zombie shoots with the paintball or whatever, you're starting to see more and more people trying to sell that stuff, which means the market is trending away from that. And I think that escape rooms are the immediate future.
And the fact that escape rooms are not just limited to Halloween, you know, so many people use them for team building exercises. I mean, just about every medium to large city has now got an escape room year round that, you know, companies come in and work together and get their teams doing things. And, and all that. It's and it's scary how big this has become as a phenomenon. I mean, Transworld had Escape Room City.
Oh, that was incredible. All that floor space just for escape rooms.
There is at least 2 conventions dedicated to escape rooms that are coming up this year. I know one is in New Orleans, and I think the second one is in Chicago. Do not quote me on that. We'll certainly have more information.
That's the one that Transworld posted.
One of the two is. I think Transworld might be doing the New Orleans one.
Okay.
I can't remember at this point. You know, we'll certainly make that clarification if needed. But what do you guys think? Is it a flash in the pan? Is it a long-term thing? I've heard from several people in the industry, and I'm getting about 50-50. Yes, it's going to be here forever, and some people think it's going to be gone in 5 years.
I think
go ahead.
Well, go on. No, go for it, Jerry.
As long as The Walking Dead is viable and popular, I think it's going to be around for a while. How long? Hard to say. We had one out here, I think, last season, and it did okay. Didn't do, stupendous, but it did all right.
Zombie shooter, escape room?
Both.
Okay.
Both. Now, escape rooms, we do have a place out here that does escape rooms, but it's more team building, like you said, more team building thing. I actually did one last year, and it was fun, but if it's not done right, it loses your interest fairly quickly. I think that they're going to try to maybe ramp it up to make it more scare factor type thing than anything else. But as far as the zombie room that I heard about did fairly well.
Sure.
I think Jerry really hits it right, especially with you got to do it right. I mean, it's the same thing with the shooters, with the zombie paintball and stuff. It's a novelty the first time if you're shooting at props and things, but if you're not getting the same thrill as a zombie movie, as, you know, something coming at you, some sort of challenge without it just being a noticeable add-on and, hey, here's another way to get $15, $20 out of a customer. You know, if you're not competing with the video games, if you're not giving that type of unique feel, the novelty wears off. So, you know, it may be a hot thing for your haunt 1 year. If you don't work at it, if you don't invest in it, if you don't keep going with it, like anything else in your haunt, from scenes to food to your ticket sales, the novelty will wear off. You'll lose any unique selling point to it, and it'll start becoming albatross around your neck, and you'll be selling off your paintball or your zombie shooting things. If, you know, your escape room doesn't change and, you know, people go, oh, it's great, you do this, and you're out. You know, as soon as the word starts getting around, people will lose the expectation. If they want to go there and be challenged, if they're not challenged anymore because their friends spilled the beans and spoiled your escape room, you know, you're not switching up. It's, oh, that was novel and that was it. I did it once and I'm never coming back.
That is a very salient point. And I think, you know, the haunt industry may take this and run with it and make it a haunted house thing in the next few years. But for right now, it's kind of a everything or anything goes in an escape room. You could be talking about, you know, this topic or that topic. So it will be interesting to see where the haunt industry and the non-haunt industry go with escape rooms. We're probably going to have a roundtable on escape rooms at some point in the very near future. So all you folks stick around for that. But let's looking at the clock, it looks like we're starting to get a little short of time. Wanted to touch on one more topic before we wind this up. And that is, we seem to be in a period of lots and lots of horror movies and TV right now. Over the past few years, you know, shows like Walking Dead, there's Fear the Walking Dead, there's Supernatural, there's all these different shows that, and a lot of these different movies, and especially things like Krampus have really started taking off in Hollywood and things like that. And I think that's also somewhat giving the Halloween industry a bit more, as we said before, legitimacy. I mean, horror is big right now. We can't deny that. And, you know, there's talk of more and more horror movies coming out. I just saw today they're getting ready to do a remake of Nosferatu, or they're getting ready to do a remake of some other movies that we all grew up with. You know, Rob Zombie's been doing remakes of all these 80s movies. What do you guys think? How long do you think the Hollywood bandwagon will be doing horror movies and TV shows like this? I know Walking Dead's the biggest show on TV right now. So, you know, if that doesn't prove that horror is big in the industry, I don't know what does.
Well, you know, and from my opinion, like you said, some of these shows like Supernatural et al., Supernatural's actually been around for like 10 or 11 years now or something, or close to that.
Sure, but did it have the ratings back then as it does now?
It's actually gotten stronger.
Yeah.
And it has gotten stronger.
The Walking Dead is by far the 800-pound gorilla in the room as far as TV shows go. Fear the Walking Dead, I'm not quite on the bandwagon with that one. I'm not real...
Jury's out.
Yeah, it's...
Right.
I'm not impressed with it at all. But, you know, the movie trend is going to stay for a while. But the problem is, just like in the movies, people want to see bigger, better, scarier. That's what they want in the haunted attractions. And people are becoming, and I've said this a lot over the past 5 years, people are becoming jaded.
Mm-hmm.
And it takes so much more to scare somebody than it did 10, 15, 20 years ago. You know, things that... even 5 years ago that would scare the pants off of somebody, they just kind of look at you and it's the kid jock who thinks he's tougher than everybody else and just looks at you, you're not scary. You know, that's the problem we have with all the gore and in the movies. People become jaded and they want to see more. I mean, what do they want? Actual physical decapitations?
Probably. I mean, you can't just go out and paint all your actors with white face paint and black eyes and throw some blood on them and expect them to go out and be scary. I mean, look at the masks that were out there at Transworld this year, last year, the year before. You know, stuff by Immortal and CFX and SPFX. All those companies are just making unbelievable, disturbing and scary stuff now because they've kind of had to. Look at the costume companies that are out there now. Look at the set designs that are going up now. It's just, I love the fact you said jaded because, you know, we've always talked about that. We're a bunch of haunters and we go to those haunted houses during conventions and tours and things. And, you know, we're not scared by them. We're looking at the set designs and all that stuff. And, you know, when you're working at one of those haunts during the tour, you know, I think you and I are probably going to be working Scaratorium Friday night of MHC. How hard is it going to be to scare a bunch of haunted house people coming in where it would have been so much easier to scare the general public? But that general public, as we've talked about, is getting more educated. They know more about what's going on. They watch these TV shows. They see bigger and better special effects. And, you know, what is going to scare a 15-year-old in the year 2020 or 2025?
Well, see, and that's part of what I'm getting at. You know, like, last year, I was working at a haunt, and everybody was running up with their cell phones and cameras going, and they'd look at you and go, what movie are you from?
Well,
I'm not from any movie, and obviously I don't answer it that way, but they look at you confused because you're not a recognizable Hollywood monster, and it's like, you guys don't understand what you're missing by looking at us like you're confused.
Right?
You should be scared.
Is it like I teach in my classes? Is anybody terrified of Freddy Krueger today?
Right.
1980s Freddy Krueger.
Right.
He's comic
right.
relief. Is anybody terrified of Jason from the original Friday the 13th? I mean, what's going to scare the next generation of people in haunted houses? I guess we'll basically have to stick around to find out because I think that looking at the clock again, it is kind of about time we need to get out of here and continue the show. So let's just kind of go around the room here. What do you think has been a big thing in over the past 4 years, and what do you look forward to for the next 4 years in the industry? Storm, we'll start with you.
All right, buckle up a little bit because I'm actually going to take the last thing, go on a little bit of a rant here because we hit on television. We hit on, you know, all those awesome shows that are out there, such as Buffy the Vampire Slayer, Goosebumps, Tales from the Crypt.
Doing a remake of that, too.
Well, that's my point. It's not exactly remakes. Horror is always in the entertainment industry, has been since the birth of film. Has been since, you know, the printed word and getting the printed presses out there. Why is Walking Dead so popular? Is it because of stupendous, awesome zombies? No, it's the story. It's always a story. People weren't ever really afraid of Freddy Krueger and Jason. They just had more intriguing stories than the people that they killed. That's why they had all kinds of sequels. You didn't care about the people who died or survived from Friday the 13th or Nightmare on Elm Street. You cared about continuing the story of this character, which can inspire some fear, can inspire some humor. You wanted to learn more about it. And that's where good horror comes into. That's why stuff like The Walking Dead, the zombies and stuff are just eye candy and the great stuff. It's being engaged in the characters in the story. It's the same thing with The Haunt. You know, yeah, the kids will go there looking for movie characters and things they're familiar with. You give them something that they want to be familiar with. If you can have an awesome character out there, your actor doing it, if they're not drawing in that audience into that character, and doing things which are behaving and creating a story around it, you're going to lose your audience. You'll just be eye candy, and that's what people will go with it. You go from having customers to having fans when you draw them in with that story. And that can be done from every aspect of your haunt. And that's how you draw in horror. That's how you make your haunt going from just something fun to do in October to being a tradition. That's why you're seeing haunts that have a different story for Valentine's Day, for Arbor Day, for 4th of July, drawing in an audience for that special opening because there's a continuing story. There's something that they've been drawn in and they want to learn more about. That's always been the key with horror. It stays popular and can keep coming around in culture because it's drawing people in. X-Files, they reboot it because it drawed people in. You see reboots because people want to see the story continue, not because it's this super great original idea.
Very interesting topic. Go ahead, Jerry. We'll go to you next.
Yeah, I think that I agree with him on that. You know, it's the stories that have got to get, you know, people's attention. But the one thing that, you know, you brought up reboots. As we've seen over the last few years, some of them reboots are terrible. And this trend is continuing. And I think, you know, there's an issue right there in itself, is that, you know, Hollywood and both the television and the television and the movie industry have lost, you know, can't come up with anything original. I think that if the haunt industry can get off the bandwagon jumping, and, you know, we brought this up before, Cthulhu. You know, Cthulhu has got a big interest in the haunt industry. No one's done anything with it other than maybe imagery. I think the next trend might be, you know, in my opinion, from what I've seen, you know, doing a spin on the witch mythology. And, you know, witches, everybody, you know, thinks of nowadays as, you know, oh, the wart, the green skin, the wart, you know, the whole, you know, Wizard of Oz thing. I think that if done right, I think witches could be just as viable for the haunt industry in the upcoming years as a zombie or anything else.
Like Harry Potter?
No, Harry Potter.
How about you, Jim?
You know, one thing about this industry is what you think is going to happen doesn't, what you don't want to happen does. So I'm just going to sit back and wait and see what happens next.
Chupacabra.
I still would like to see that.
Arbor Day haunts.
Chupacabra in the Amish haunt.
I love the idea Jerry said about Cthulhu, and you know, that's just such a rich, complex story in and of itself, and I just look at it as, you know, we're haunters. We always want the most creative, the most terrifying, the greatest story, the greatest, you know, props, the greatest set designs, the best actors we can buy, basically the best music, of course, and everything that makes a good haunted house. But we got to remember, is that what we want or is that what our customers want? I mean, my biggest fear is that somebody's going to create this amazing esoteric haunted house that's, you know, based off of Lovecraft or something like that, that's going to completely screw your mind and you'll walk out there a changed person. And the first person that goes through there says, that sucked. There was no chainsaw at the end. So, you know, do you have to go with the lowest common denominator for the person that buys your ticket, or do you have to, you know, create and recreate and reinvent yourself every year? You know, Netherworld this year just announced their two haunts for their 20th season, the themes for them. They sound unbelievable. I will certainly make a trip down to Netherworld and check those things out. But yet they have the requisite chainsaw at the very end, and no doubt they've probably had that all 20 years. So anyway, like Jim says, we're just going to have to wait and see what's happened. You know, it's been an amazing 4 years. We've seen a lot of changes, and no doubt there will be a whole lot of changes coming up in the next few years. Anyway, looking at the clock, time to wind this sucker down for good. Let's thank our hosts out there, and thank you, of course, for listening. So all our great co-hosts who come up with such really good topics of conversation, including Storm.
Here's your free advertising marketing for your haunt this year. Have your ghouls come out in somebody's backup camera in a car.
I don't like that.
Oh, my God, that's genius.
Oh, yeah, it's scary. Still, Allison got a new RAV4, and we made a wrong turn and are in this dark road and go to make a K-turn, and I look at that thing, I go, dude, if like a little kid comes out behind us or something, we're done. We're all dead. No one will ever find us. Scariest goddamn thing. Backup cameras at night on abandoned road.
Sweet. Let's work on that. I'm just going to go to the unknown scare actor at this point.
I'm writing this down. This is good material here. I'm going to have to use this.
The Haunstrumentalist, Jerry Vane.
I can only imagine what the soundtrack would sound like for that.
My name is Drew Badger. Probably something like beep, 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 ah! You're listening to the Roundtable of Terror here on The Big Scary Show.
Banjos. Lots of banjos.
And pigs.
Shadows Symphony. Shadows Symphony. The Haunting of the Crowley House. On the Big Scary Show. Big Scary Show. We'll be right back.
Lights, camera, action!
Scare Actor Spotlight.
Greetings, Haunters. The Unknown Scare Actor here. It is the end of April, and I've put the call out to several people. I posted it out there on Facebook, and this lady was kind enough to respond to my call for actors. Her name is Christine Lajewski. She's from up in the New England area, and she works with Storm. You guys know Storm. He's big with the Big Scary Show. He takes care of us up in Rhode Island. Christine, how are you doing tonight?
I'm great. I'm looking forward to this.
I just got to say, you know, this is the first time we've had anybody from Storm's neck of the woods up there. How are things up at Trails to Terror?
Well, I don't know what the theme is for this coming year yet. Storm would know this better. But I think it's a great place to work. I love an outdoor haunt anyway. I will take that over any other type of venue. I love the frosty stars and being in the woods with shadows and fog, if you can get it, you know, natural fog, and just that whole nine yards, even if it's cold and snowing.
So I have to ask you, Christine, you know, I want to say that we're like some of the more mature haunters out there, you and myself included. What got you started in scaring people?
It was opportunity more than anything. My love of Halloween, I mean, I'm 63 years old, so we're going back to the early 60s when I was going out as a little trick-or-treat. But my memories of Halloween is something that kids can't do these days. And that is being 8 years old, going out with your brother and your friends, and you're just running around the neighborhood. And in your 8-year-old head, you think you're getting home at midnight or later, and of course you're not. And the night is filled with mystery, and it's like just complete freedom, even if you don't even do anything bad. And so I've always loved Halloween. I've always loved scary movies and scary stories. And the opportunity presented itself when Spooky World moved to Gillette Stadium in 1999. I saw an ad in the local paper, and I grabbed a girlfriend, and I said, "We are doing this." And that was it.
Okay, so, you know, you've already given your age out, so I'm going to ask you, what age were you when you started doing this?
46.
46.
46, newly divorced. I mean, I would have done it if I was married, but it was just, you know, it was also just a new thing to do, you know. Women who reach mid-40s and 50s, you know, they say it's a second adolescence for them, and this was part of my second adolescence, I guess.
Okay. What were some of your inspirations? I mean, did you think about scaring people? I mean, growing up, you said you loved horror movies. Or were there any inspirations that really just fired your imagination?
I've always preferred just a good monster over, you know, say, over sci-fi. You know, my favorite X-Files episodes are the weird creatures and the monsters as opposed to this, you know, the conspiracy stuff that they were always doing. Loved, you know, Creature Feature on Fridays and Saturdays on local TV. Loved the classic Universal Studios monsters, you know, Frankenstein and the Mummy and all of those. You know, so to say I had one single inspiration, I think that's where it started. And then as I got older, it was, you know, what sort of things creeped me out. And it tended to be, I went from monsters toward what is just really wrong with this situation. And Stormy will tell you that when I haunt, it's just doing something that's really wrong, just not right, and creeping people out.
Speaking of Storm and Trails to Terror, what is your favorite character out there at Trails to Terror?
That I've done or other people have
that
done?
You've done?
My favorite was probably Naked Mole Rat Woman. It was an industrial toxic accident scene, which they do in some form or another. And this was one where I had, you know, a little ferrety nose, bald cap, pink skin, little ratty ears, and then just a long robe and tattered clothes, and coming out of a closet and, you know, kind of making, you know, little animal noises around people and telling them that they really need to get out of here. You really need to get out of here. It's a bad place. That kind of thing. Let's see. I did a character for 3 years that we called Mother. And because I found that being a middle-aged woman and not being very maternal, it probably scares grown men the most. So I did her for a few years there. It was basically saying, if this is what bothers them, let's just mind the mother load on this, you know, no pun intended.
Well, that kind of segues into my next question, since you've had, we've conversed via email, and I've seen where you've had several different characters. What is your favorite scare to date?
My favorite scare to date was at Spooky World, and haunt actors, of course, all know of something called the train, and that is where a group of usually teenage girls come through. Whoever's the bravest is in the front, and then the rest are all linked up with their arms around each other's waist and their heads buried in each other's backs, and they don't see anything. They just shuffle through. And so I saw this, and they had already passed two or three other actors with just a couple of little squeaks because they couldn't see anything. So I tapped the last girl, the caboose of the train, on the shoulder. She looks up and she starts to scream, but I signal, great character, I signal to her to not do it. And I kind of give her a little sign to get out of line, and I take her place. So I am now the caboose on the train. Meanwhile, is laughing and walking alongside her friend who, you know, they're looking right to the right and to the left occasionally to make sure they just don't fall over. She looks to the right and sees her friend walking beside her. So it was kind of like, what the hell? And she stops, the whole line stops, and she looks up, and then she looks, sees her friend, then looks behind and sees me. And then the whole train just breaks into a run for the exit. And they just ran without stopping through the whole set. Except for this one girl who now is just laughing her ass off.
That is absolutely amazing. I love when something like that comes together, and it sounds like you pulled it off perfectly. But, you know, moving on a little bit, how long have you been with Storm at Trails to Terror?
Let's see. I believe this is going to be my eighth year. Started in 2007, I believe. The years start to run together. But yeah, I think it's 2007. So this will be year number 9, I think, for me.
Now, working at Trails to Terror, what was your favorite character working there to date?
Let's see. I did. I really liked the Naked Mole Rat woman, but I also, year before last, they had a toy shop, so I was an evil toy maker, and it was less the character than the team. You know, the whole is greater than the sum of its parts. And I was working with a really neat young actor named Michelangelo. So I was the toy maker. I basically was just out in the open, but I had a very scary-looking dolly, and I made my face up to look like the doll. So basically it was me and Mini-Me, you know, in very similar clothes. And he was my demented evil toy who was hiding, and he would come out, you know, so people were, as soon as they saw the door and they saw a sign that said toy shop, almost to a person, they would say, I don't want to go in there, you go in there first, because they just didn't even like the idea. They came in, it was very creepy. I think Stormy had a lot to do with the way the set looked, in fact. And I would just come towards them and talk to them, and, you know, they were scared enough of that, but then Michelangelo would come out and tweak them on the ankle from below. And of course, that's not what anybody expects, and that just set them off running. So it just was a really good I liked it. I liked the concept. I liked the character, but I also liked, you know, just what happened when we had, you know, these two actors together, what we were able to accomplish.
Okay. Based on what we've talked about so far, it sounds like you like to do a lot of interaction with the people that come through the haunt, and you're very vocal. Is that something you prefer to do?
Yeah, I'm yet to play a zombie because zombies only moan.
Right.
And I like to be a smartass. I like to think of a catchphrase that even if I'm doing it, you know, 1,000 times a night, it creeps people out. I think my favorite was just being a basic ghoul. I mean, of things to say. And thinking of what to say, I just came up with this, you know, shuffling towards people going, yum, 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 bite, 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 yum, 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 bite, bite, bite. And it freaked the shit out of people.
Well, let me ask you this. Working at Trails to Terror, the average age, and you know, I'm ballparking here. The average age of the haunters around 25, mm-hmm. and you and I are, you know, beyond that. How do you feel working with some of the younger actors?
In some respects, being around young people, you know, kind of just keeps you in tune with the world. You know what I'm saying?
Like, yes, I do.
Going on. Obviously, if I've been a teacher, I like young people. They're not horribly young. These are people who are, you know, they're at a stage where they're trying to make a life for themselves. They're trying to figure out what their career is. You know, so it's almost like once you're in makeup and stuff, except for, you know, like what their interests are and things like that, you know, like, you know, a lot of gamers and going to Comic-Con and stuff like that, which is like, at my stage, it's like, I don't really care about. Age doesn't matter once you're actually acting and everybody's made up and ready to go. And I would say the only thing that's a downside is, but this can happen regardless of age, is when you have drama kings and drama queens, you know, on site. And we actually have very few of those. But there is something about acting that may tend to attract more drama kings and drama queens than you might see in other jobs, because it's, you know, it's not Meryl Streep, but it's acting.
I agree with you. And, you know, most of the drama kings and drama queens are somewhere between the age of 18 and probably 23.
Yep.
And we're way beyond that. You know, we don't want to deal with that. We just want to scare the hell out of people.
Yeah, and to be honest, you know, by the time people are hitting their upper 20s and 30s, it's like, yeah, I think I'd kind of do that too if I was ever into that. And fortunately, most people aren't. But, you know, that's the only thing that's annoying is when people are into that. But you can say that about any workplace.
Oh, sure. I mean, you know, in a haunt, it's all subjective. Most of the people are in their 20s, maybe early 30s. You and I are probably the exceptions in a lot of cases. Now, I'm not saying there's not haunts out there with middle-aged actors out there, but, you know, we've got a little bit better head on our shoulders, and, you know, we know where things are going. But all that aside, something that you emailed me before we got started was the fact that you are an author.
What?
And you have written a book. A couple of books, at least.
Yeah, one is published, which is not horror. I just am currently working on horror.
So why don't you tell everybody about the book that is horror?
Okay, I've called it Bone Belly. Great name. It's copyrighted. And it's about a man who wakes up in the woods in Rhode Island, and he's been grotesquely transformed into this creature who's very skeletal-looking, except he's got an enormous belly, a tiny, skinny little throat, and then a gigantic head and mouth. Constantly hungry, but whenever he tries to eat anything, it turns to ashes in his mouth, and it hurts to try to put anything down his throat, and he discovers from his demon caseworker, demons are caseworkers in the story, the only thing that's going to taste good to him actually turns, he finds this accidentally, is human flesh. But he can only eat small mouthfuls at a time because his stomach just won't, is enormous as it won't allow him to eat very much. So he's tempted by the sound and smell of nearby people to satisfy his hunger. But he also figures out that perhaps this is a test. Why give me this desire if I'm never going to be able to satisfy it? So maybe if I don't satisfy it, there's a way out of this terrible hell. So he tries to stay away from people, but it's a miserable, lonely life. And he hears a sound coming through the woods, and following it, he comes across this farm where there is this gigantic celebration going on, and it's a outside theme park, haunted theme park. It's based on Trails to Terror, but I changed a number of things about it, so it's not actually Trails to Terror, and I had to make the geography work for the story. But he kind of falls in love with it. And one is that all the actors are basically trying to be him, and it's the only thing that lightens up his long, dreary years in hell. And so he begins to watch the haunt actors, and he even begins to sneak in and participate in the scares. Four of the haunt actors figure out that he's there, and they don't say anything because he's so good. And everybody, all haunt actors appreciate another really good haunt actor. In the end, he has to defend his haunters against something that's even worse than he is. And then, you know, there's bodies and people who escape and so on.
Well, as I say, don't give us the ending of it because I'm interested now. I'd like to read this.
Yep, I have it sent out to publishers, so I'm hoping to hear soon. I'm not opposed to self-publishing, except that that costs money. You know, but I'm hoping to hear relatively soon, and I'm hoping it would be out relatively soon for people to read. I'm currently working on a series of shorts, horror short stories, and two of the stories in the collection at least refer back to the actors, characters who appear in Bone Belly reappear as haunt actors in these short stories. And they're, you know, so the haunt continues after the whole Bone Belly story has played out, and they're still doing their little haunt thing, but other new things are happening at this little corner of wooded Rhode Island.
And, you know, Rhode Island, of course, being the smallest state in the country, just kind of really brings it out. And the fact that you're writing a story like this, or that you've written a story like this, really appeals to me, and I think it'll appeal to quite a few of our listeners out there.
Well, in addition to the story, it's like maybe about half the action takes place at the haunt. But it also shows the haunt in its early stages as it's being created. You know, so it wasn't there and then it was. And it's behind the scenes. It's actors as they're being made up. It's actors, you know, the actors. There's something about going to be a haunt actor. You know, we're a pretty rowdy bunch when we're acting. Not all of us are so rowdy when we're not acting, right?
True.
You know, among other things, of course, I put in a middle-aged woman. It was my way to start vicariously. But and she's not exactly like me, but what she is someone who like runs a yoga studio. So, you know, during the week, you know, she's running around blessing people and going, you know, and teaching people to live mindfully, and she's a vegetarian. And then when she's doing her haunt acting, you know, she's chasing down people that she wants to eat, you know. So it's that weird dichotomy of being an actor but having a normal life. You know, for, 10 and a half months for the rest of the year.
Sure. It sounds like you've got a great formula for a good book here that really, I mean, will appeal to a lot of people that work in this industry.
I hope so. And, you know, I hope once it's published, I can kind of get out there, you know, and promote it with haunt venues and things like that. And certainly I'll be doing that on haunt sites on Facebook and places like that.
Well, if you know, when you get published, we'll be happy to, you know, put something out there to let everybody know that check this out, because it sounds like something I want to read.
I hope so. I hope so. I mean, one thing I can say is I can actually write. Well, let's face it. Everybody has a book out there, right?
Right.
These days. You know, well enough that somebody else wanted to publish my first book. So, you know, and I've had a couple of horror stories published as well, short stories published as well. Okay. You know, so hopefully this will be, you know, something that does appeal to anybody who loves Halloween and anyone who loves horror. But it is partially dedicated to just to haunt actors in general.
And speaking as a haunt actor myself, I'm hoping a lot of people will cotton on to this and give it a read once you get published. And speaking of which, how can people find out more about you, about Trails to Terror, or about your book? You know, is there any information out there that they can find on the internet?
I do have a website, although there's not a lot about Bone Belly on it right now. I'm going to start posting more, even though I don't have a publisher yet. And that would be christinelajewski.squarespace.com. And then, of course, Trails to Terror has a Facebook page as well as a website. And, you know, so definitely by late summer, people should be checking that out to see what the plan is for the coming year. Like I said, I don't know what the theme is yet. I'm not privy to that.
We'll have to beat up Storm and get some info out of him.
Yes. You know, I'm also on Twitter, CM Jeske. And, you know, so I certainly would love to hear from people in the haunt industry. And I've joined many of the haunt actors and home haunter sites, and as well as there's an organization called New England Horror Writers. You just apply if you actually are a horror writer or even dabbling in it. I'd like to suggest that. It's a very good group that puts out a lot of information about magazines that might be looking for stories, as well as places, events they go to promote books if you have something to promote. So if you're thinking of becoming a haunt writer, or you are a haunt writer in New England, sorry, for the rest of you, look up NEHW on Facebook and think about joining it.
Well, you know, we do have listeners that are in New England besides you and Storm, so
yeah,
I'm sure they'll check it out. Christine, I want to thank you so much for being a guest on Scare Actor Spotlight this episode. It's been very informative, and it's nice to kind of talk to a scare actor that's around my age, because most of them are, you know, younger than us.
Yeah.
So speaking to a middle-aged scare actor really, you know, gives people a perspective of what it's like on our side of the equation. And I wish you so much success in the future. I hope you get published, because I know I will be the first to step up and read your book, because you've got my curiosity piqued, and I've got to read this now.
Oh, great. Well, I hope it's going to be soon.
You know, maybe somebody will hear this and say, hey, we need to get this publisher to take care of this book.
Yeah.
So, anyway, thank you again for being on Scare Actor Spotlight. I am the Unknown Scare Actor, a.k.a. Jim. You know, I'm the worst kept secret in the haunt industry. But Christine Lajewski, thank you so much for being a guest here. Tell Storm, next time you see Storm, just pop him upside the head for me, will you?
Sure, yeah.
All right, and for the rest of you listening, we'll be right back.
And remember, listeners, if you're a scare actor who's interested in talking about what you do and how much you scare people, just drop me a line, usa@bigscaryshow.com, and we'll get you on the air.
Do you hear that?
Whoa!
The asylum is being overrun. It's time to go to Von Caron Productions and check out the Insane Ensemble. For those troublesome lunatics, they have the commitment coat, a straitjacket designed to keep them restrained. Or, if you're the doctor who likes to experiment, then the psychosurgical coat was made just for you. Go to Von Caron Productions, www.voncaron.com. That's V-O-N-C-H-A-R-O-N, Von Caron Productions. Get there before you too are infected by the madness.
Yeah, here we go. Hello, everybody. Drew Badger here, live, the Mad Monster Party in Charlotte. We're starting to wind down just a little bit. Actually, I'm lying. It's Saturday, and things are going hot and heavy, but I can't be here Sunday, so I thought I'd talk to one of the men in charge. Always been a pleasure to speak to this person, Mr. Joe Moe. How you doing, man?
I'm doing good.
It looks like Mad Monster's doing good as well for 2016 in Charlotte.
It keeps growing. Charlotte is our tomb away from tomb. And we love it here. It keeps getting bigger and bigger and better and better. Our photo ops, I think, are the best in the business. And, you know, we're doing full makeup and character photo ops. Tom Savini is dressed up as Sex Machine from Dusk Till Dawn. We got the guys from What We Do in the Shadows, Ben Francham, and all these guys dressed up as Peter the Vampire, and Cass, done by the actual makeup artist, Don Booker. We brought some of them all the way in from New Zealand.
Wow.
There's tons of stuff going on. It's just incredible.
And I know this is going to air after Mad Monster Charlotte is over, but you've got another show coming up in, 6 weeks or so?
Yeah, it's coming right up. We're doing Mad Monster Arizona, which will be at the Wecopa Resort and Casino. We've got the run of the whole venue.
Is that we'll Phoenix?
That is in Scottsdale, I believe.
Scottsdale, ooh.
And it is, it's going to be filled with the same kind of events and programming and stars that you want to meet. In the Painted Desert.
Who would some of those stars be?
Well, you know, right now we're still developing our guest list. Barlow is very careful to make creative programming that all links together, so we can be getting guests right up into the last minute.
Sure.
Right now we've got people like our good pal Patty Mullen, Frankenhooker, for sure, and some other secret guests that are coming up.
So, you know, we can go to the website, which we can talk about in a second, to get that information. You've got a few people announced.
Yeah, and you should go to the website, because we fill those spaces constantly, weekly, and you never know. Plus, we listen to you, so if you go to the Facebook page and request the people you want to see most, don't be surprised if we end up getting them for you.
Absolutely. You know, I've been telling you, Alice Cooper, Dee Snider, for a long time, mm-hmm. but, you know, we patiently wait.
Believe me, we request at least twice to three times the amount of people that we end up with, because with all of these active performers, scheduling is really tough. You know, if they're touring or if they're, you know, they're working on a movie, we can't necessarily get them. So it doesn't always line up, but we're always looking and we're always listening to you guys when you request people.
And that's kind of one of the charming things about Mad Monster is, you know, a lot of these other cons, they know who they're going to get a year in advance if they can. And mm-hmm. and while I'm sure they take a lot of listener requests and influences and things, you guys really, I mean, you talk personally one-on-one with a lot of people I see on the forums and things.
Yeah, we do. We listen. We take it very seriously. We, you know, sometimes we get our best ideas from the fans' requests, and sometimes we go fishing in places with people that have never, ever done a show. The guys from What We Do in the Shadow, it's their first show. We've got Stefan here, who is the voice of Colossus and the smash hit Deadpool. This is his first show. We're constantly trying to bring new people to the fans, bring new people into the Mad Monster family. And we've been real successful so far, especially in Charlotte. We've been welcome from day one. And we're not planning to go anywhere as long as you keep showing up.
We love the fact that you came all the way from California to open something in Charlotte because you thought we needed one. And yes, we did. And we have hopefully paid you back many, many times. Now, you have gone to other cities and you've not gone back to other cities, but you've seemed to keep Charlotte and Arizona kind of steady here.
Yeah, Charlotte and Arizona, we put down roots, we test out other cities, and then it's just a matter of if we never go anywhere we don't intend to stay, but if we can't get our dates and if there's other issues and timing issues, it doesn't always work out. But
So let's wind this up, because I know you're a very, very busy man here with the who, what, where, when, and why of Mad Monster Phoenix 2016. Where can they get that info as well?
Go to www.madmonster.com and check it out.
And it's just that simple. Coming up in May, Mad Monster Phoenix again. Mad Monster Charlotte doing a great job. Joe,
thank
again.
You.
We will see you in 2017. Always a pleasure to have you here. My name is Drew Badger for the Big Scary Show, and we are out.
Music for Haunts. Music for Haunts. Church of Torment. Church of Torment. On the Big Scary Show. It's time to build your undead horde with the best rated zombie props 2 years in a row. You'll find them at creepycollection.com, along with the scary creepy clown props, the frozen meat locker props, the deadly doll props, the creepy killer props, and the deadly deal life-size bodies. creepycollection.com, the online source for all your pro haunting and animatronic needs. You'll find creepy collection props in many venues, from yard haunts to major screen parks to movie production and even crime scene investigation. Featuring FearFlex technology, Creepy Collection is taking the static out of static. For your gore and more, that's Creepy Collection at www.creepycollection.com.
Greetings, Frighteners, and welcome once again to the Weister's Haunted Vista. Hope everyone had a blast at Transworld, at least those who went. Sorry we couldn't be there, but things happen. My wife and I are hoping we can attend the 2017 event, but time will tell, and it always does. Anyway, starting this month at the suggestion and request of a few folks, I'm going to revisit and revamp some old territories. As most of you listening know, I used to do a segment on the Hauntcast show from 2012 to 2014 called The Terror Turnpike, where I reviewed commercial haunts across the country, along with corresponding visual pieces on my blogspot page, The Weister's Halloween Haunt Journal. It was brought to my attention that a lot of these reviews are fairly old, anywhere from 2 to 4 years, some longer, and could stand an update. And while I won't be turning my segment here on Big Scary Show into an unending stream of reviews, you can at least expect 2 or 3 a year, maybe more, maybe less, depends on the circumstances. By way of a disclaimer, and to defuse any gossip or speculation, there's plenty of that going around as it is, my revisiting this subject matter is no way a comment or a shot at my former podcast. This is purely about updating my original materials, nothing more or less. And with that, we're returning to Akron, Ohio, to visit one of the most legendary haunts in the Buckeye State, the Haunted School and Lab. Their website is hshlab.com, and they also have presences on Facebook and YouTube, but then again, who doesn't anymore? Search for their namesake for them both. My wife and I have seen spectacular haunts all over the country, but this one in particular has such a wonderful atmosphere to it. Makes equal parts of the best of the Universal monsters, 1970s haunt nostalgia, tons of imaginative and beautifully executed sets and costumes, a darker-edged dose of Disney's Haunted Mansion, and a commitment to quality and originality, and you've got this place. The Haunted School and Lab are one of those attractions that started from a grassroots home haunt and, with time, creativity, and a genuine love for Halloween, have evolved into something truly special. All the technological advances are nice flourishes to add spice on an attraction, but you have to have a solid foundation first. Modern audiences are far more sophisticated, and with all that pizzazz being great eye candy, true, but, as they say, where's the beef? The beauty of this one is simple. They've constructed and reconstructed the majority of their sets and props, and with over 40 years of experience, have developed a unique and remarkable haunt with substance and character. There's nothing like doing it yourself, is there?
Right now, we're trying to sleep out here.
The schoolhouse has been in operation since 1974, 2016 marking its 43rd year of scaring people silly, while the Haunted Lab opened in 1981 and will be celebrating 35 terror-filled years this season. Two separate buildings with 7 floors of ghoulish delights. That's a remarkable achievement these days. We've been there at least a half a dozen times since 2008, and we always try to bring friends and family whenever we can. Our visits in 2014 included a behind-the-scenes tour, plus an opening night visit that included a meet-and-greet with the staff, but more on this a bit later. The schoolhouse and lab have earned national recognition with awards from AOL, Fangoria Magazine, Haunt World Magazine, CityBlood.com, and many, many, many others. One of the key elements of their continued success is that it's a community event when they open their doors. Akron, Ohio, while not exactly a huge city, has its fair share of places to go, things to do, and sights to see. This place has a warmth and charm that is sorely lacking from a lot of attractions. In spite of what a lot of people may think, the old adage of making the customer feel welcome applies here as well. On our first visit in 2008, we arrived particularly early, and a young man was already made up and stalking the premises. We had a really good conversation with him. He took a few pictures with us and of us, and welcomed us to come back anytime soon. Turns out, this guy's name is Ryan Hydett, and he handles the PR for the attraction. You could say that's extreme self-interest, and a lot of the time I wouldn't argue with you, but we made a second sojourn that year, and he saw us right in front of the line, and he gave us one of the warmest welcomes and sincere glad-to-see-you-again greetings we've ever had. He also helped us snag a couple of T-shirts. All I can say is our gratitude to him extends to today. This warmth translates to the entire working staff, by the way. As I said earlier, this is a big community event, and it is also very grassroots and one of the prides of the Akron community. Everyone here is a joy to talk to, and always affable and accommodating to every question. That's one of the biggest reasons it's so special. The school and lab are one of those attractions that started from a grassroots movement and, with time, creativity, and a genuine love for Halloween, have evolved into something truly, truly special. The quality and detail here is unreal. It genuinely rivals the pros with all their technical wizardry. Dare I say it, the folks behind all this could make a killing selling props of their own. I can't say this enough. When going through the attractions, if you can, take an extra moment or two and to take it all in. The quality, sophistication, and detailing on the place is unlike anything you'll see in a scratch-built haunt. A little personal history here, please bear with me. I lived in Chicago until July of 1988, and in Dayton, Ohio ever since then. I've seen my fair share of haunts, good and bad, in both metropolises. After my family's transition from Illinois to Ohio, the mid-1990s led me to a lot of farmers' field walkthroughs and hayrides, and this is before things became ultra-restrictive with regards to rules and regulations. I was in awe of the level of stuff being attempted back then. I've been chased down paths by demonic farm equipment, watched scores of corpses rise from their graves in cornfield cemeteries, and was condemned to be mummified alive as part of the Pharaoh's curse. No kidding, but I cleverly got out of that one. I gave him my at-the-time girlfriend instead. Hey, she was cheating on me. She deserved it! And yes, for the record, they did wrap her up and put her in her sarcophagus. Ah, what you could get away with back then. The school and lab harkens back to that era, before everyone went lawsuit happy, before the Chicago Tylenol poison scare of 1982. Trust me, I lived not too far away from where it happened, and it crippled a lot of the commercial haunts and ruined several independents that year. And it also started to change the rules of the game for everyone concerned. This was one of the triggers on insurance rates for haunts going sky high. Bringing things up to date, my wife Lisa and I met in 2001. And, starting that fall, began taking in commercial haunts across the Ohio-Miami Valley. I think our first journey was Cincinnati, Ohio's Kings Island, their Fear Fest, and it was on its maiden voyage, no less. It was a bit primitive back then, but was a lot of fun and a forerunner of things to come. We spent the next few years taking in all our localities, but in 2006 we began to travel. Atlanta, Chicago, Indianapolis, St. Louis, all over Ohio, to name just a few. Year after year, far and wide. If you had a haunt worth investigating, we were there. And the people overall were so accommodating and generous, I can't tell you how many times we've been taken to the front of the line by owners and hosts who wanted us to enjoy the show and get home at a civil hour. What brought me to doing the podcasting and the blog page was a simple question asked by a friend of mine. Why don't you start documenting what you've seen and share it online? And the rest, as they say, is history.
Welcome to Fright Night.
bringing things back around, the motivation for both haunted houses sparked in the brain of Donald Johns and his wife Cindy after they first visited Scream in the Dark, a haunted house in downtown Akron, which operated for 6 seasons after opening in 1969. The schoolhouse debuted a few years later during Scream in the Dark's farewell season. Although Don passed away in May of 2013, his spirit lives on at both haunted attractions. Flowers from his funeral have been strategically placed in some of his favorite scenes. His popular lines of, "Oh, geez, and that'll be good," often echo through the dark hallways of both haunted houses by longtime employees. Because of Don and Cindy's innovations in the industry, national media has ranked the haunted schoolhouse and lab among the scariest in the nation. Actor and Halloween enthusiast Daniel Roebuck visited several times in the past, saying, "These are two of the best haunted houses in the country." Highlights? That's a tough one. One of the best, and I don't say that lightly, Castle Dracula sets in the country. Check their website's photo section for a look at it. This is something you really need to stop and take a closer look at. There's also a terrific Frankenstein's Laboratory, and take a really close look at Frankie, too. Terrific stuff. Also worth looking over is a massive cemetery that's been around, tweaked and perfected for who knows how long. Oh, and say hello to George, who just seems to take forever in the bathroom. Also, when they advertise 7 levels of terror, they aren't kidding, and it's all by stairs. My family and I are in reasonable shape, and those things just about killed us. Please take that into consideration if you come here. There are no access elevators. Remember, as I mentioned at the top of this is along the lines of a darker version of Disney's Haunted Mansion. It's best to err on the side of caution in regards to younger children. I consider this one semi-kid-friendly, about 8 or 9 years of age being the cutoff. Truthfully, though, most younger kids we've seen there tend to dig it, so draw your own conclusion. The attraction site offers this advice. We do not recommend our show for children under the age of 7. Please understand that the show may be too intense for children who cannot discern fantasy from the reality of what appears to be happening. You certainly know your child better than anyone else, so we suggest you bring young children at your own discretion. And by the way, this place is actually haunted. Employees, visiting psychics, and paranormal investigators have reported many strange things in the darkened halls. Most of these occurrences have taken place in the laboratory's 3rd floor around the lurid library. That's just a hint for those interested. Nearly everything at the haunted schoolhouse is handcrafted. You're not going to see the usual rigmarole of store-bought props here. The artist at the haunted schoolhouse and lab has spent hours perfecting scenes and adding just the right amount of detail. The haunted library pays tribute to Don Johns with a portrait in the background. The haunted laboratory features not one, but 2 massive Tesla coils. The second is identical to the one on the top of the roof, but you're inches away from it inside. It's an amazing sight, and one of the best props you'll ever come across. And it's electrifying, to say the least. Wrapping things up here, by way of a visual accompaniment to all of this, check out my Blogspot page, the Weister's Halloween Haunt Journal. I've done 2 pieces on the school and lab, the original dated September of 2012, and the more in-depth article was unveiled, ooh, how cryptic, in October of 2014. Also, I wanted to mention a young couple who are dedicated haunt followers themselves, and they have a review site to prove it. Check out thescarefactor.com, run by Tyler and Nora Prophet. My wife and I met this young couple a few years past, and they definitely have their fingers on the pulse. Well worth checking out for interstate ghoulishness. And in keeping with that, check out the June 2015 post on my Blogspot page we produce for these fine haunters, full of info on their history and supplied with photos granted by the couple themselves. Final word on the schoolhouse, I'm giving it 5 out of 5 hidden bodies. This is one of the best the Ohio Valley has to offer, a 40-year-plus gem, well worth any haunter's time, money, and attention. Don't miss this. There's very few like it. I want to extend a special thanks to Cindy Johns, Aaron Swan, and in particular Ryan Hydett for all the courtesy, accommodations, and assistance with all these endeavors in the last few years. None of this would have been possible without their generosity and input. Got a comment or idea? Drop me a line at ericbssh@gmail.com or look me up on Facebook. You'll stand a better chance catching me there. I answer one and all. Coming up on future editions of the Vista, if the stars align, I hope to have an interview with Mr. Hydett in the near future, with possibly a few other staff of the school and lab. Fingers crossed, folks. Next time around, we'll resume our look at the classic monsters and zero in on what is considered the last of the great universal horrors. I'm referring to, of course, none other than the creature from the Black Lagoon, his influence on monster movies, and the odd fact that, except for two sequels, no one has ever gotten a remake of the original off the ground. Funny thing, that. Just for your information, my wife and I hope to be attending Chicago Frights again this year, so if you see us, stop by and say hello. It's in Orland Park this year, which is my old stomping ground, but more on that later. So, until next time, always remember Svengoody's credo and brush your fangs, comb your face, drink your milk before it clots, bite Mama goodnight, and always remember, I hit Axl Rose's body for violating AC/DC. See everybody next time.
Tired of surfing all over the web to find the latest haunt news? Why sift through hours of those VideoTube channels trying to find the latest how-to videos? Isn't there an easier way? Of course there is! Introducing HauntersDigest.com. With HauntersDigest.com, just one click will put a world of haunt information at your fingertips. From the latest news, to vendor information, to video tutorials. And don't forget the soon-to-be world-famous Haunt Brief, which takes a deeper look into many aspects of the industry. There's even a directory of over 800 haunted attractions, so you can find the right one for you. Still not convinced? There's even columns written by many experts in the industry covering a wide range of topics. Rumor has it a certain member of a particular podcast might even write for HauntersDigest.com. As an extra bonus, you can follow them on Twitter and Facebook. For more information, visit www.HauntersDigest.com. today.
As we slide back into the swamp where we hid the body, we would like to thank the following people: Screamline Studios, ScreamlineStudios.com, Necrotic Creations, NecroticCreations.com, HauntPay at HauntPay.com, Von Charon Productions, that's VonCharon Productions. VonCharon.com, Dark Spectre Custom Couture, Creepy Collection, Darkest Fears Unlimited, and Virgil Franklin, Master of the Ether Muse. We would also like to thank the Forga hosts, including Storm. Check out his rants and more at HauntMinute.com. The Unknown Scare Actor, Actor Trainer, and Traveling Actor Troupe. Find out more about Maul at MaulMonsters.com. That's MaulMonsters.com. The Hauntstrumentalist Jerry Vane. Check out his latest CD, Circus of Nightmares, at JerryVane.com. Drew Badger, actor, trainer, consultant, and more. RabbitBadger.biz. You can leave us feedback. Feedback at BigScaryShow.com. If you have any news, news@BigScaryShow.com. Check out our Facebook page at Facebook.com/BigScaryShow. And Twitter at TheBigScaryShow, where we just may tweet some info you won't hear anywhere else. You can also search for us on iTunes and Stitcher. To keep up with all the latest news and info, you can always find us at BigScaryShow.com. And thank you for listening. Without you, we are nothing.
The Big Scary Show is copyright Big Scary Show, LLC, and no rebroadcast of this show may be made without express permission of the owners. All music used on The Big Scary Show is used with expressed permission of the artists themselves.